Welcome to the Movie Film Show, featuring Mr. Movie and Mr. Film. This week, our hosts venture off to the cinema and return with their insightful reviews on I'm Still Here and Resident Evil Afterlife, plus a special DVD pick of the week from Mr. Film. And now, without further ado, here are Mr. Movie and Mr. Film.
Hello, I'm Mr. Film.
And I'm Mr. Movie. And for our first review, we're taking a look at the movie I'm Still Here, a supposed documentary about Academy Award-nominated Joaquin Phoenix's retirement from acting and his attempt to delve into a new career of... Okay, now it's time to roll your eyes, Mr. Film. Rapping!
I have a little studio, do you know? Like in my garage, got Pro Tools set up.
See, that's a mother problem. When people try to do things, they don't do it the way they do it for their own industries. When you go make a movie, you don't go. You got money to make a movie, right? Craft services.
Yeah, it costs a lot.
Trailers.
Yeah.
Makeup, hair, DP.
Good point.
Gaffers.
I get it.
Same thing. Studio, engineer.
I got it.
Me.
Well,
me?
Yeah, you. I get it.
Do you have any money?
Well, how much you need?
How much you got?
Okay, that's a conversation that Joaquin Phoenix has with Sean P. Diddy Combs when soliciting him to produce his new rap album. And to say that Mr. Phoenix is out of his league in the music business, well, that's a bit of an understatement. At close to an hour and 50 minutes, I have to say, this whole thing is actually put together pretty well, and it tells the story of a man lost in his career, yearning for a change as he attempts to change the direction of his life. But it's really hard to like him. He snorts cocaine, he hires prostitutes, smokes pot and cigarettes incessantly, and is, well, let's face it, an amateur when it comes to rapping. Now, there's enough adult content here that they didn't even bother trying to get it rated by the MPAA, a smart move as it would likely end up with an NC-17 rating, given some of what goes on in there. Now, the poor guy here is just hopelessly lost, but there is something to connect with as well. The theme of struggling with one's own identity is one that most of us have dealt with at some point of our own lives, though likely we've done that in junior high or high school. But it's messy, and this is the extreme depiction of that. So the question here is Joaquin Phoenix just playing the part of Joaquin Phoenix, or is this really him? The picture doesn't offer answers to that question, but it doesn't really matter. Whether you think it's a hoax or not could be an interesting indicator of one's own sensibilities about oneself. And if this is a practical joke of the rich and famous, it's funny, even hilarious at times. I found myself laughing through much of this, especially at the absurdity of all those involved in Joaquin Phoenix's crazy life. Ultimately, though, at the heart of any joke is a premise, and the premise here is, should I take this guy seriously or not? And that's a little disturbing, but also an interesting commentary on Hollywood as such, which is filled with wannabes and people partaking in the charade of doing something important when many times they are just way out of their league. For example, there's an interesting comment by one of Joaquin's assistants who, when asked if what Joaquin Phoenix is doing is the right thing, he answers something like, I just can't question that. If Joaquin wants to do something, we do it. Now, in the end, it really doesn't matter if this whole thing is staged because the point rings true. And on the whole, I found I'm Still Here funny, a little disturbing, and there was much to recognize in a man struggling for identity. I'm going with a B+ on this one.
Oh, dear God. Are you kidding?
It was funny.
I think this was one of the worst films I've ever seen. And that's mainly because it's a joke. And I think that's interesting that Joaquin, throughout the whole movie, whenever he's being interviewed and someone's kind of making fun of him, he gets upset. What are you doing? You're making fun of me? Well, he's making fun of us. He's making fun of the idiots, and I'm one of them, who paid money to see this piece of garbage. For God's sake, the guy won a Grammy for Walk the Line. He's recorded music, but he acts as if he's never done this. This whole process is a mystery. It's incessant calls to P. Diddy, which is just half an hour of the film. Now, I think what's even really telling here, and I'm part of the, I think this is a joke, this bizarre joke, is that none of the songs were listed as being written by him. If written is what those were, whatever those disasters that were hip hop were. But I think more problematic is that I don't really know what the film was trying to do. Was it a meta joke? A punking of the entire industry? Was it a way that to show celebrity isn't all it's cracked up to be? Or was it really a documentary about a guy in free fall? I don't know, and I don't really care. Fundamentally, a subject has to be interesting to be a subject of a documentary or a mockumentary. And Joaquin Phoenix, or Joaquin Phoenix in quotes, as shown here, isn't. As a mockumentary, it's stupid. A successful actor trying to become a hip-hop superstar? Come on. As a documentary, it's pathetic. As a piece of filmmaking, director Casey Affleck does a credible job, but technique doesn't replace story. Now, Mr. Movie, I agree with you that parts of the film were funny.
They were hilarious. Some of those interactions with P. Diddy when he plays his first rap song for P. Diddy, just like the look on his face is just, I don't know, it's hilarious to me.
Well, I like that. I like that in sort of a way, but that's 30 seconds of an hour and 50 minute long film. Most of it wasn't ha-ha. Most of it was this uncomfortable, you've got to be kidding me, train wreck sort of thing. I mean, defecating on a guy's face, yeah, hilarious.
That was a bit, you know.
But that was out of control. Come on. even the jackass guys wouldn't be doing that.
Yes, they would. Yes, they would.
Yeah, but at least you know it was, you know, I don't know. If you're looking for a funny mockumentary about music, just stick with Spinal Tap. If you're looking for a real documentary about music, and there are dozens and dozens and dozens to pick from across every genre, including hip hop, just close your eyes and point to one because it's got to be better than this piece of garbage. So I say avoid at all costs. You'll be doing us all and yourself and your brain cells a favor. Now, I give this an F mainly because it's in focus. So if it hadn't been in focus, it would have been a no grade because this is how bad this film was.
I think that if you liked the David Letterman interview, whether you thought it was real or not, you just thought it was funny. This is, you know, an hour of 50 minutes of that. And it worked for me. I thought it was funny. It was a little disturbing, but it was funny. And the end, I don't know, the end was bizarre. But
the end. Okay, the end was one of the weirdest, and I've seen a lot of weird films in my lifetime. It's one of the weirdest endings I've ever seen. We could do a whole show just on those last 3 minutes of the film.
Okay. There's a lot here to think that it was staged. Like, there's a few scenes that are obviously ADR'd. You know, there's a cast of credits at the end.
Yeah.
But, you know, maybe they had to do that to show that, you know, Joaquin taking all these drugs and hiring prostitutes so they could say that for legal reasons it was, you know, quote unquote fictional, but really it's real. So, you know.
I don't know. I think what's really telling, too, is that in the L.A. Times, there was a short piece that said that he is actually – his representatives have been approaching film producers to get back in the pictures. So, you know, I think this whole thing was a very calculated joke. And I think there are a lot of things – some of the things that happen in the film, and we won't give them away in case you actually do want to waste your time and see the film. There are certain things in there I think that are safety valves that would allow him to get back into pictures if indeed he wanted to.
Okay.
So moving right along.
take it away, Mr. Film.
From the sublime to the violent, for Resident Evil fans, the answer is yes. There is life after extinction, with the fourth entry to the Resident Evil film series, Afterlife.
5 years ago, a virus escaped, and everybody died. If you are out there, there is hope. My name is Alice.
The R-rated 3D gore fest from Screen Gems picks up where the third picture ended. Alice and her super enhanced clones have tracked down the evil Umbrella Corporation to the ruins of Tokyo and proceed to take on numerous security officers and mastermind Albert Wesker, played this time around by Sean Roberts. Now, during the process, she loses her cloned allies and her superpowers, which causes certain complications later on. With Umbrella out of the way, Alice, played by the always tough as nails Mila Jovovich, goes on a quest to track down her friends from the last picture and uncovers yet another conspiracy that lands her, this time, in zombie-infested L.A. with a new group of colorful survivors. I have to stop right here, Mr. Movie. I have to make a confession. The entire Resident Evil franchise is a big, big guilty pleasure for me. Now, I know. I shouldn't like this. Now, in spite of myself, I like the other three films, and I'm a huge, too big of a fan of the video games. So I found this outing satisfying. Not great, but satisfying. There are enough elements of the games, particularly from Resident Evil 5, to keep the gamers happy and fans of the film series cheering. I particularly like the fight with the Resident Evil 5's The Executioner, probably one of the best boss fights for your gamers out there, to ever be translated from video game to cinema. And like other fans, I was glad to see favorite Chris Redfield, played by the perfectly cast Wentworth Miller from Prison Break, finally make an appearance. There are a number of other fun surprises in the film for the fans and trivia people out there, which I won't ruin, but suggest you stick around through the credits for one of the biggest. That being said, I was disappointed that for all the kinetic action, that there weren't more zombie fights. That's what Resident Evil is all about, killing zombies. The long stretch of exposition while Alice is making her way to L.A. sort of made the film drag a little for me. But once things got moving again, I was happy that there had been a breather. For anyone who isn't a fan of the films or the video games, I recommend you give Resident Evil Afterlife a miss. You won't understand what's going on, what's the big deal, or why all the fanboys in the audience are gasping with delight when various characters appear or events occur. This, of course, is the problem with flicks like this. It's tough to get caught up if you haven't been around since the beginning. If you do feel that you must see this film, at the very least because its 3D is quite good, I thought, then I recommend that you rent the first three films or give the video games a go beforehand. That'll help as well. So this is not the greatest zombie film in history, but certainly worthwhile for the fans. Now, for the fans, I give this an A. For everybody else, B+.
All right, Mr. Film. Well, now it's my turn to roll my eyes.
Roll away.
I mean, on a certain level, I get Resident Evil. I mean, here we have supermodels with always perfect makeup, running around with big guns, often drenched in water, and you always have the money shots shooting the zombies and kicking butt. But for
me, what's wrong with that?
Yeah, well, I mean, for me, it's mostly like watching someone play a video game. Always intense, but never quite satisfying unless you're at the controls. And, you know, this is a movie, so that's not an option. So a yawn here or there may make you feel like you're patiently waiting for your turn to play, though we know that will never come. I guess unless you buy the $50 video game.
Which you should do.
Okay. Overall, I think the performances and the storyline are solid for what this movie's trying to be. Although, I mean, come on, flying from Alaska to L.A. in a single-engine plane with one tank of gas, I mean, and there's no, like, humans left on the planet, so I don't know where she gassed up, but whatever. It's a video game, right?
It doesn't matter.
Right. Okay. The movie does move along at a decent pace, so I give it credit for that. But the arch villain at the end is a big misfire, I think. He's so completely over the top in his acting, and his character is just so absurd that even on the movie's own terms, that final battle scene was just a bit lame. You know, I wasn't into the previous movies, so for me there was enough zombie killing, and that sort of super mega villain big zombie was kind of cool, and that scene was fun. It's some neat action sequences, and if you see it in 3D, like, you know, it's pretty cool. For diehard fans, I agree with you. This will likely deliver for you, but overall, Resident Evil Afterlife just isn't up my alley. So, Mr. Film, you're going to have to settle for a C- from me on this one.
All right. Well, that's better than what I expected. But, well, I have to say, though, I mean, for just a popcorn experience. I think this delivered a lot better than some of the other films that we've looked at in the last few weeks and films we've seen over the summer or in the last few months. So I think that for what it was trying to do, just being a fun, you know, just being that kind of fun action film that respected its core fan base, I think they did a good job. They set it up for another film. I think it's better than a C-. So I think you need to think about that.
Okay. I'll think about
it. You need to rethink that.
I don't know. Some of the action sequences feel a lot like Matrix ripoffs. Though, you know, those are worth ripping off. So,
yeah.
I mean, you know, but it's not particularly original. You know, Mila Jovovich and her sidekick, Ali Larder. Was she in the previous installation of this movie?
She was.
I didn't quite get her role. Can you explain that?
In the previous film, she was leading a group of survivors across the desert. And
who cares? She's just a beautiful model, and they're all killing zombies. I mean, that's the point. So,
yeah, she's a beautiful model. She's killing zombies. There you go.
Okay.
All right.
I'm sticking with a C- just because.
All right, you're wrong, but that's okay.
Fair enough.
You can't be right about everything.
We have a special feature this week, a DVD pick from Mr. Film.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Movie. Now, this week, we lost one of those great character actors who's always on hand to make the material they're in, whether good or terrible, a bit better than it could or should be. Kevin McCarthy, who's been a fixture on television and film for decades, died at the age of 96 and working until the end. I actually know that he'll have one more film appearance, hopefully coming out in the next year or so. And while he typically was cast in supporting or character roles, he did have his moments in the sun. One of the best of these was the original 1956 version of Invasion of the Body Snatchers. Here, McCarthy plays a small-town doctor who, after returning from a medical conference, finds that his neighbors and friends are acting out of sorts and bizarre. Soon he discovers, to his horror, that aliens from outer space are taking the place of the townspeople, with plans to invade Earth by absorption. The black-and-white sci-fi flick is best when it has you question who's an alien and who isn't, and McCarthy's desperate and increasingly vain attempts to stop the baddies from taking over the Earth. His performance starts out easygoing and amiable, and soon turns to panic and over-the-top hysteria as he finds himself alone and without help. The film is typically seen as a parable of the anti-communist panic that swept the nation in the early 1950s, but that shouldn't scare you off. I think that director Don Siegel is very clever here to make the story more universal and scary by simply keeping it focused on the who's human and who's an alien storyline and avoiding a lot of the overt political stuff that is typically read into the picture. And in the latter part of the film, when it becomes a chase piece with McCarthy's attempt to escape the inevitable. While I love the story and the simplicity to which it was told, it's refreshing that there are very few special effects, particularly in our age of Avatar and other big pictures like this. I really enjoyed seeing McCarthy in the lead role. It was one of his favorite roles, and it's easy to see why. The filmmaking is assured, the script's solid, focused on characters, the plot suspenseful. So I say move it to the top of your Netflix queue or run down to your local video store and rent it right away. And you'll be happy that you did. And then keep your eyes open for Kevin McCarthy's frequent, numerous, albeit small performances. When he shows up in a film or TV show, it's a delight.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Film. I'll definitely check that out. Now to quickly recap the show. I'm still here. I gave a B+, and Mr. Film gave it an F.
That's only because it was in focus. And I gave Resident Evil for a general audience a B+, for the fans an A. This is the one we've been waiting for. And Mr. Movie gave it a C-, but I think he needs to rethink that.
Okay. All right. Next week, we're going to take a look at Easy A, a romantic comedy coming out in wide release. And then we're going to take a look at a couple of smaller releases. One is another documentary called Catfish. And then we're also going to take a look at Never Let Me Go, starring Keira Knightley, amongst others. So
yeah, I think we're finally moving into some good pictures coming out.
Well, it's getting close to Academy Awards season, so this is the time.
Yay.
And we'll see you next week.
See you next week.
Okay.
All right.
I think F was a little harsh on that.
Come on.
I mean, come on. It was put together well, at least. Like,
it was in focus.
Were you just, like, bored out of your mind?
Oh, God, I was dying.
Oh.
I was dying.
I was laughing my ass off.
Well, you know, it was funny. There were points in the film. I mean, like that whole thing with P. Diddy. I mean, that actually was kind of funny. And the thing with Ben Stiller. He says, at least I'm not sitting there with a shirt on my head. But for those like three or four moments, the rest of it was just like, oh, what the hell is this? So,
I mean, what's better, this or Airbender?
I mean, they're different. It's hard because they're different. I mean, you know, this was a supposed documentary, and Airbender was a supposed big adventure movie. So.
Lots of supposed.
He's making fun of the idiots, and I'm one of them, who need money to see this piece of garbage. For God's sake, the guy won a Grammy for Walk the Line.
And finally, a small f*** called. Finally.
Never let me know.
I know, but I said f***.
Oh, oops. Gotcha. Oh, dear God. Are you kidding? What are you doing? You're making fun of me? It's one of the weirdest endings I've ever seen.